Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn, and I am currently sitting.
And I'm Steve Marks, and I as well am currently sitting.
We decided to mix it up this week. We thought, since we opened the new studio, they actually created one just for our show.
Yep.
We would take the opportunity to revamp how we do the show. We thought sitting would be the way. It projects a much cooler kind of attitude.
Brand new studio. We want to change everything around, so we kept the same table and the
same monitor,
the same TV.
But we brought in chairs.
But we have chairs.
Yeah. Well, we got an extra $100 budget in this particular episode. So for this week, we're going to be talking about the news, but we have a special feature, which Steve is going to be showing a whole lot about, which is this concept of how we can load and run code dynamically in Windows Azure. So it allows us to multi-purpose our worker roles, or in some cases we might call them generic roles or dynamic workers. You'll hear the term thrown around a number of different ways. But for this show, we're going to be focusing on some practical ways that you can actually accomplish that. To get started with, though, let's kick it off with the news.
This sitting down thing is going to be a problem, I can tell already. Because, like, we have this history on the show of going, like, that's about, like, 15 minutes of stuff, and then we go for, like, 45 minutes. And that's with the pressure of standing up the whole time. When we're sitting here and we could just, you know...
Just talk.
We could talk for hours. So,
This is
a good time for everybody from home. I know he's trying to actually start the show. All right, fine. Okay, here's the show.
Well, what's great is without me turning to look at the screen, I can't actually see what you're projecting. But
yeah, but now that we have...
Yeah. But actually, I know what this post is. This is from Rob, right?
It is from Rob. This is from Rob. It's about maximizing throughput in Windows Azure.
Part one.
Yes.
So this is probably a 10-part series, we're going to assume, because...
Look, we're wrong frequently. When we assume that part one means there's going to be a part two, that's not always the case.
Yeah, we've been proven wrong before.
Yes. But I trust Rob. I think that he's going to do a part two, especially now that we've mocked him about
this
it.
This is just a great post. He's been doing just a lot of work with our blob storage system.
Yep.
And he's been testing different size files. And we pointed to it, probably 10 episodes ago, but he had this throughput analysis.
Yeah,
and he kind of figured out what the optimum block size was and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this one was the super zoomed in older
version.
One. Yeah, which was you know, like, what block size should you use? Where should you upload from? How should you, you know, and lots of pretty graphs, which always make me happy. And yeah, he's at it again with sort of different take on it this time.
In this one, he's done just some amazing analysis across different size of the nodes. So, like, if you choose a small versus an XL, what's your throughput going to be in these 500 megabyte size files that you're uploading, and what the download speed is. Anyhow, ton of information out there.
This looks really odd.
Yeah, doesn't it?
The medium had a slower download, which is...
Well, what it is, though, that's a little bit of luck of your noisy neighbor kind of problem. So
I'm wondering is what the sample size is here and how much of this... I mean, most of the graphs actually look like you'd expect, so I guess he's probably getting fairly good data, but there is a little bit of luck at the draw, particularly when disk I/O is involved, because that's actually one disk.
And network I/O.
It's actually a few disks, but it's shared among the different VMs. And network I/O.
And the NIC is shared as well. So the only way you get really the dedicated resources of the entire node is if you take the XL.
Yep.
But if you take a small, you can kind of exceed what your allocated quota is if your other neighbors aren't doing a lot at the time as well. But there's really no way to guarantee that unless you buy that size.
Right.
But anyhow, you... Take a look at this post. It's actually quite good. I'm excited to see what part two looks like and what his conclusions are.
And part 10.
Yeah, well...
By the time we get to part 10, I mean...
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
I can imagine. All right, let's move to the next one. This is requesting a token from Access Control Service in C#.
I'm not even going to try to say his name.
I was just going to say, like, I don't want to...
We call him Ski here at Microsoft. In fact...
Skier is pretty much his alias, right?
He introduces himself as Ski. He doesn't even say his name.
That's...
Like, the first time I met him, he was like, hey, I'm Ski. I was like, what? It's like...
That's
is that
cool.
Short for something? Like Brewski?
It is. It's
or...
short for Skierkowski.
Yeah. the point to this post, though, is he's put together a little utility class to request tokens from ACS. And it's kind of like a token factory, he calls it. And it has a bunch of standard methods in there that are going to be part of another post, which if you flip to the next one.
Oh, I will.
Oh, you will. he shows how to request a token using the web client. So this is a little bit different than if you're a .NET developer today using the standard SDK and everything. I think there's some tools within Windows or within the WCF framework that just kind of will do the token request for you, some bindings and whatnot.
Yeah.
This is the case where, let's say, you need to just make that token request with another client. It could be PHP or anything like that. This shows just the fundamentals of how that's done using just the raw HTTP, which is kind of interesting in itself. So you can see really how what's going on under the covers if you used a framework like WCF.
Right. Cool.
Yep.
That's I always like to see the... sometimes people are misled by the fact that we have these cool .NET object models on top of these things, and then they go, okay, wow, it must be doing a lot.
Yep. Right?
And I like the times when people go behind it and just go, well, look, it's just mapping to a few simple kind of REST calls, and here's what they look like. And even if you never actually use it that way, it's really instructive to see just how simple that part is.
Yeah, especially when things go wrong, if you understand what it's supposed to be doing.
So you can actually look at, you fire up Fiddler and see
what's
happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Invaluable. And this one we just had to talk about because we are psychic. People don't know that about the two of us, but sometimes we actually, when we cover in the news here, it's stuff that hasn't even happened yet. And we're so in tune with the flow of the cloud that we know what's coming. And so we had no idea. This is not like we already knew this. We had no idea last week when we made some jokes about how there are always more CDN nodes and it's sort of the number goes up all the time. We had no idea that that week there were going to be some new nodes.
And indeed
online.
There were.
So, yeah.
So the official count's now at least 22, right?
22 is, yes, 22 is the
by the time you official count. By the time you see the show, it's 23.
By the time you see the show, it's bound to go up. We should have some counter, you know, that's just sort of slowly rolling over. So more nodes in the CDN specifically to enhance service in Asia. So
right.
This is gonna boost that CDN performance for users who are located in Asia and accessing your CDN resources. So that's cool. It's constantly rolling.
Exactly.
I think it's time now for us to talk about our feature.
Yeah.
For this week. So Ryan actually gave a good sort of description. I'm not sure what to call these things. I like general purpose is kind of weird. Dynamic maybe is a word, but it's a worker role where at deployment time you don't have to hard code the behavior of the worker role, but later you're going to be able to strap in new code or change the behavior in some way. And so there's a whole class of solutions for this problem. People have solved this problem in different ways already. In fact, there's a framework. I should have been more prepared and pulled up a link for that, but maybe we can add the link later to LOCAD. LOCAD has, as part of their LOCAD cloud framework, which I think we've talked about once or twice already, they have some code in there that's about sort of dynamically loading assemblies in a worker role, I think. I have a slightly different solution here than that. Ryan has another solution that he's working on also. So there are a lot of different ways to handle this, but the goal is always the same. The goal is to go deploy something that's a worker role that's just ready to do whatever you need it to do.
Exactly.
And then go copy over some code. Usually all these solutions actually involve blob storage, putting some DLL or something in blob storage and having the worker role just run whatever that code is. So the worker role is generic, can sort of take anything and go run that code. And so the question is sort of what solution do you put around that to run that?
Why do you want to do that? I mean, this fits into the pattern where you have either processes that don't run very often, and it doesn't make sense to spin up an entire role that just sits there and is maybe called, I don't know, once an hour or once a week even.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to run a compute node for that. The other is if you have lots and lots and lots of little things, but they relatively take up small number of resources, you can take all those and kind of consolidate it into one worker that's running many processes, and you get more bang for the buck. Because in the cloud, you kind of want to abuse your roles. I mean, you want to use the CPU as much as possible.
Right.
You want to make sure that you're getting the most bang for your buck. If you're going to pay for it, don't let it sit there idle. So make it work.
Yeah.
And this is one of those patterns to do that. Now, if this is like a middle tier, like your worker role is a middle tier of a system or something like that, and it's in pretty heavy usage, probably not the appropriate pattern.
Yeah.
But this is really good for those batch processes or those things that you want to kick off occasionally or change very dynamically. One day you could be running this version and next day you could be running that version. I got to have this going.
And I tend to use this. I've actually been using a solution like this for a while for that like quick experiment in the cloud or or I'm debugging something, I'm not sure what's going wrong, but I want to be able to change the code and sort of redeploy, and I don't want to actually have to redeploy and wait for that process to finish and whatever. So it's sort of a rapid iteration thing also. So I've been using it as kind of a debugging tool and just for that. And so anyway, so let me show you guys my solution for this, and we'll sort of talk about the alternatives I think a little bit as we go. And show this off. And so basically, the idea behind the code that I'm about to show here is it's a worker role that does nothing but pull blob storage. Every time there's a new file there, it copies it locally. So it's basically syncing blobs locally. And anytime it copies a blob locally that ends in .exe, it runs it. Okay, so it's really simple. So it's just looking in blob storage. Anytime there's a new executable, it copies it locally and does process.start on that executable and just runs whatever it is. Okay, so I've got this running in the cloud, which means now I can copy any executable into this specific container, blob container, and copy as many as I want. It'll just launch all of them.
Yeah.
And we'll look at the code. There are a couple subtleties, but that's basically the idea. Now this is opposed to the alternatives, I should say, are probably to do some sort of assembly instead of, there are a few ways you can invoke some other code. This is probably the simplest, is just run an executable. If you've got a .NET assembly, you could do something like load it into new app domain and just invoke the code there. You could use mef potentially, and I know that's something Ryan's been teasing me with for a while, as he's working on a mef solution for this.
I use mef. I've seen folks use the app domain.
Yeah.
The thing with the app domain, obviously the reason you choose app domain or processes or any of these things is you want some element of stability.
Yeah.
Right? If you had a plugin or whatever this thing is called that you're running that is crashing occasionally or could go down, you don't want to bring your role down with it. So if you create an app domain, that gives you some layer of isolation. It's like a lightweight process.
Yeah.
But you can also unload it. And when you create a process, obviously that's even better protection than even an app domain. That thing can crash, it could have memory leaks, it could have all sorts of stuff in it, and when that process dies, all that stuff is gone. So this is a good model. The one caveat, though, of course, to a lot of these things is, today at least, which relates to our tip of the week last week, is you, for a process that you're launching, you can't call into the role environment right now, the managed role environment. You can p-invoke into the native, but you can't call into the managed role environment. So anything you have that needs to be taken from the role needs to be passed in as a parameter.
Yep. And you'll see, I'm not doing it here, I'm doing something else, but you'll see sort of in the executable where it would have made sense for me to just use a configuration setting, and I'm not because I won't have access to that. And so
one of the
drawback to this role, and using something like mef would help.
What gets around that, when I use mef, I actually, the version I have, you can pull in a plugin, launches it, but since it's kind of loaded into the process already, it now has access to the role environment as well. I can import that as a part.
Right. And so you can do inter-role communication and stuff
exactly.
That here would be very difficult to do. You could pass a port and listen on the right port, and I've done that, but that's about it. Okay, so the code is really simple. It's reusing something that we've talked about, I think, on the show before. If not, you can find it on my blog where I did with my hosted web core thing. I had this blob sync, and so it's using the exact same sync engine that just takes blobs and copies them locally. And so what I'm doing here is basically starting a synchronization process that is syncing a specific blob container with a local path, which is a local resource that I've declared in my CSDef file. And so it's a container, there's a path locally, and then there's I have a configuration setting called sync interval in seconds, and it's set to 5. So every 5 seconds, it's going to copy everything from blob storage down locally that's changed, and go from there. And when it starts syncing a file, there's a when it starts a sync period, I go through and I kill every process that's already running. Okay, so it's really simple, right? I copy this executable, I launch it. As soon as I start syncing again, and I mean, as soon as something changes, not every 5 seconds, but as soon as something changes, I kill all the processes, and then every time I get a new file, I check if it's an executable, and if so, I launch a new process. And so I start that process again. So that's it. There's a little more in here. I'm taking the console output, so the std error and std out, mm-hmm. and I'm doing a debug.write line on them. So I'm basically taking the console applications output, turning those into debug strings, which means diagnostics can pick those up and log those. And so it's a kind of nice way to deal with sort of a generic console app if you want to get sort of that debug output. Right. In the console app, it'll go to the console. Here, we're sort of forwarding it back on to debug output. When a sync is complete, I queue up all the executables here, and then when I'm done doing a pass of synchronization, I actually launch them all. So here I'm just doing for each process, start it. If there's some sort of exception, pass it on to the debug output. That's it. On stop, I shut them all down. I kill all the processes on the way out. Right. I probably don't even need to do this because Windows Azure will do this for me. If I don't do this and stop, it'll all get cleaned up with the rest of the role instance. That's it. That's basically what the code does. And what it means is I can just drop an executable into this container, and it'll immediately start running 5 seconds later or so. It'll immediately start running in the cloud on every instance of this role, and it'll just keep running indefinitely until I replace it or upload something else.
Or if the process itself doesn't, if the process exits,
yeah,
it's done, right?
Yeah, I actually don't. Right, I don't try to restart it or anything. Like this code, I actually thought about it. It's probably a good idea to do something like that. Like if it dies, log whatever happened, but then try to restart it, because that'd be more like the experience you get with a regular worker instance. I didn't do it here. So if you have a process that just does something once and exits, it'll do it exactly once. It won't happen again until you update something else. Then it'll launch everything again.
Right.
And so I've got this running in the cloud, and to show that it's working, I wrote a little console application that is currently running in there, that's in that container and is running. And this application, here's what I was talking about before. Here's where I've hard-coded a connection string, because I can't use the configuration setting because I'm in a different process.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I could have also passed a connection string on a command line, you know, as an argument or something. So what this code does is it reads a queue forever, and it writes to an output blob the reversed string. So you put something in the queue, it reverses the string, writes it in some blob. And when it starts, it puts this text started in here. So if we go to this blob, so here's the blob that it writes, output.txt here. It says started because we're actually running this thing. Here's the console worker in the executables container. So that's where it got it. It just executed it. It says started. If we go, I'm using My Azure Storage here, and put in a message, hello world, it should get picked up by that console app that's running, and it gets reversed and put in here.
Ta-da.
As drawla, as that's pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it works. And so we should, you know,
should probably
try some other strings.
Yeah,
let's put Ryan Dunn in there. Nud Nair.
Nair Nud.
Are you putting something in there?
Oh yeah.
Let me F5. Okay, here we go. Ryan Dunn rocks.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually test the truth of the statement.
No,
it just reverses it blindly and puts it in. Let me put in one here. You guys might know Brian Keller. He's one of the guys on This Week in Channel 9. Let me put that string in here, see what happens. Enemy of the show.
Oh.
Brian Keller is an enemy of the Cloud Cover show. I want it to be known. And he knows what he did.
Smackdown time.
So let's prove that this thing is actually working the way that I'm claiming it is. Let's actually change what this does. What should we make it do? Let's do here. Str equals message as string. Let's put how about that? We'll put the string twice. Hey, look! Did you know you can do this? This is awesome. You can actually reuse those things.
I didn't know
I was
that.
So thrilled when I learned that. I guess that's why they have numbers. It just didn't really occur to me. I was so used to the, you know, percent, F whatever, and like, and it's nice to be able to reuse those. Okay, so I've changed this, so now instead of putting the string backwards, it's just going to repeat it.
Is it going to still keep Brian Keller as enemy of the show?
No, that code is unfortunately not actually in this version. So I'm going to rebuild that. Okay, so now we've built that. It is here. So here's the new console executable. I am going to copy that. I'm going to go to Clumsy Leaf Cloud Explorer, and I'm going to paste it into that executables container. Overwrite. Now in the cloud, 5 seconds has passed by now, and it has picked up that new version and has launched that executable. And so if I F5 here, I should see, oh wait, there we go. I see started, which means that the thing has actually started running. Did you put something in?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, let me F5. Stephen Bacon and Stephen Bacon. So presumably he typed one of those, and it was the other ones.
I don't know if you have an error or, you know.
Yeah. Brian Keller, enemy of the show. There we go. And so there we go. The fastest you'll ever deploy some code to a worker role, I think, is this sort of thing. And that's all it's doing. So it's just pulling blobs, it's syncing, it's launching executables. Just one of these techniques, right? So we talked about you might load the assembly dynamically. You might use MEF to sort of bring the code in. You might do some interpreted code or something. This might be a Python script that then you use Iron Python to execute or something like that. There are lots of ways you might do this, but it's a cool technique. I find it useful for this sort of thing, for just sort of messing around, changing things, and verifying them quickly in the cloud. But it's also useful for all the things, you know, that we talked about, like these things, one-off tasks that you need to do, and you've got something running up there. You just need to sort of deploy a little bit of code and have it run. Some kind of code that you change frequently, some code that you're taking from a partner. Make sure it's a partner that you truly trust, because you're running their code in your process. But something like that, these are all sort of things that you can do with this. It's also a way, potentially, to put, just as a lot of folks have done, running things like Apache in the cloud, where you've taken all the Apache binaries and put them in blob storage so that you don't have this huge bloated package that you're deploying. You could use this sort of thing for that also. There was sort of a one-time thing. Here it's sort of periodically syncing. They're basically the same technique. It's just a question of, do you just do a single copy, or are you doing a synchronization? So
it's definitely a handy trick to have. Now, with that, I think it's about time for our tip of the week.
It is.
I think given the animosity here between the Cloud Cover Show and This Week in Channel 9, Dan and Brian, you know what you did.
It's just Brian.
Well, yeah, Dan
was cool.
Yeah, it's like Dan and I were kind of neutral parties in this, but we're getting pulled into it.
Yeah, but that's right. The allegiances that you have are sort of this blood feud between me and Brian Keller.
Yeah, it's getting pretty ugly.
It is.
I don't want to be involved in those email threads anymore, folks. So with that, I would say we need to have a theme of Enemy of the Show, Channel 9, This Week in Channel 9.
Yeah, all right. Let's try that.
Here it is, your tip of the week.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Okay, and so the tip of the week this week is something that we hear a lot, but folks sometimes have difficulty figuring out, or maybe it's not as documented as well as it could be, which is, how do I have an account and then share those credentials on the portal to another developer or a set of developers so that they can develop within my subscription as well? The way you do this requires a little bit of explaining, I think. The first concept that we have is a subscription, and that subscription is what is associated to a credit card. So you can think of this subscription uniquely identifies a set of hosted services and a set of storage accounts that you create. But it's really a testament to the billing relationship you have with Microsoft as well. So the person that signs up and puts in the credit card is someone called the service owner. And by default, when you do that, that person is also the service administrator. Now, these are two different people in theory, or they could be.
Right.
So the way that you would share credentials, like let's say Steve is my boss. He goes out and he purchases a subscription.
Sweet.
Yeah. And then one day he's like, Ryan, please go deploy something for me. And I'm like, give me your live ID.
Right.
And Steve's like, not so fast. So what he has to do is he goes out to the MockP portal, Microsoft Online something portal.
Customer
portal, maybe, I don't know.
I don't know.
And he updates his account to say that my live ID or a shared live ID that other people are, that everybody's kind of using.
I split those two things. I'm still the guy who owns that that subscription and that service, but
you split
I'm
going
to make Ryan the service administrator, or I'm going to make some other live ID that we both know the password to
exactly
a service administrator.
And that way I can go into this account. Now, I don't have any ability to see the billing details at this point. I can't change credit cards. I can't increase quotas. I can't do any of those things. You're still the service owner.
Yeah.
However, I'm now the service admin, which means you're not the service admin either.
Right.
So you kind of, if you don't make it a shared account, you've given away service admin. You can always revoke that and undo what you did, but you have to keep in mind that there's only one admin at a time today. You know, I think that restriction will be released in time, but right now it's one admin today.
Yep.
So why don't we just show them how that's done, because the click-through is very simple, but people can miss it sometimes.
But, right, it's something that not everyone knows exactly where to go. So here I am just on windows.azure.com, just logged in as me.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I normally go and go click here and do this. Notice it says, hey, here are the projects you have created for which you have been designated as a service administrator by your account owner. And those are those two guys who we were just talking about, right? And what we've done that makes this hard for people to get conceptually is that the default flow as you sign up is you're both.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's one guy and he's both of these things, but they're two distinct roles. So let's go to billing, and I think I'm already logged in. No, I'm not. I'm going to have to sign in again, because you're actually signing into sort of a different system here.
Yep.
And now I can see all this stuff on these subscriptions because I'm the what is it, account owner? Or this is because I'm the guy who pays the bill.
You're the account owner.
Right, so now I can go see all this stuff.
And it's online services customer portal, MockP.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be like MockP?
Yeah, it should be MockP.
Okay, anyway. So wait, let me go back and make sure that people saw this. So I clicked Manage Subscriptions here under Actions. Then I need to choose what to do here. I'm going to say Edit the Service Details and Go. When I get here, click to the next page.
And this is
the service administrator page. And so here I've basically said, here's the service administrator, Steve Marks. Here's his Windows Live ID, which is actually my Microsoft credentials, sort of federated through Live ID. And here I can instead put Ryan Dunn at dunnery.com or whatever you are.
Yeah.
And this would now turn over, I'm not going to do it, because now Ryan would have control over deploying stuff to my account, so he could shut down my blog, whatever he wants to do. And I actually wouldn't have access anymore because I don't know the password for this live ID. And so this is the sort of distinct things. Now, I could always still come back here and revoke it because I'm still the guy who pays the bill, so I'm still the guy who is the account owner and owns this thing. But here's how you sort of assign a different user to be the service administrator.
Right. And again, over time, we think this will smooth out a little bit, make it a little easier kind of to split roles and functionalities in the portal. So
right. Like,
so
you might want to have several people who do this and whatever. But this is how it works today. There are those two guys, and only one person, the service administrator, can go through and deploy things and delete things and
and
add storage accounts and things like that. So just assign that live ID, whatever you want for the service administrator. That's the tip. And
that's it.
I think that's our show.
That's pretty much it. But you know, we got some great feedback and faxes that came in, mostly insulting, but they were generally very positive
and
on the show.
One telegraph that was just
and Samantha J. Billinger, you are barely hanging on here. It's getting pretty creepy. With that, if you have any feedback or anything like that, you want to see us cover something on the show, send us a tweet, send us a fax, send us an email, CloudCoverShow on the Twitters, You know Steve's email now on the on the show.
Actually, I think if you type that, it won't work. But
okay, well, I think you can guess the domain. I think you can guess what it is.
You figure it out. It's on the side of my blog in case anyone really wants to know.
With that,
great. See you next week.